So I'm Liz Hall, the editor of Coaching at Work, and I'm really delighted to have Catherine Long here with me today for this podcast to mark Climate Coaching Action Day on the 3rd of March, 2022. Catherine is an experienced leadership and organisational development practitioner and supervisor, and she teaches regenerative principles via Wisdom of Self-Healing Systems and other bespoke programmes. So absolutely perfect that we've got you here today to talk for this event, and I'm so looking forward to exploring with you, Catherine. But I was just wondering, for people sort of listening, what do you mean by regenerative principles? If we could start by that.
Gosh, thanks, Liz. Let's dive in the deep end, yeah. Shall we? I mean, in its simplest form, it's really thinking about how does life work, how does life function in its natural state. And what can we learn from that that we can apply to our own thinking about how we live our lives, run our organisations, you know, relate to our families, et cetera, et cetera. And I guess, you know, it also implies this capacity, and this is why I run a programme called Self-Healing, you know, the Wisdom of Self-Healing Systems, is regenerative principles imply that systems are able to regenerate themselves, so that given the right conditions, and this is where I think it's really important for coaches to be mindful as to actually, am I coaching the conditions for things to regenerate, or am I possibly pulling the client away from that? And so I think this question around what is regenerative, what does it mean, and what are the implications for that in our work is really, really massive. I couldn't possibly put the answer to that all in, you know, just in one sentence. But I think it's an area of that we're exploring and uncovering together in a regenerative way, let's hope.
sounds fabulous, and sounds very much needed in these times, to be honest with you, and obviously in the context of the climate crisis as well. Okay, so I'd be really curious to sort of hear how you bring this to life, really, in your work.
Okay. And it's probably best if I give examples, because we can get very sort of conceptual and abstract. And I think this is one of the challenges when we're talking about using words like regenerative or living systems principles and ecosystemic thinking and all that sort of thing. It kind of means different things to different people. At the end of the day, one of the key things that I've learned is if it's not relevant to the client, then we're still talking in abstract airy-fairy language. But if we can really connect it to what the client cares about and the difference that they want to make in the world, then it all starts coming to life. And that's not surprising, because it's all about that. That is a kind of living systems principle, is understanding core purpose. So when we connect the approaches that we're using with the client's core purpose and their impact, their understanding of their impact and their role in the world, yeah, then a lot just flows out of that quite naturally. So I could probably speak to a couple of things, really, just to try and make it a bit more tangible. So, and I do have the permission from one of the clients to talk directly about them. So I'm working with an organization called Vivo Barefoot, and some of you might have heard of them. They make shoes for barefoot walking and running, and they have the outdoors very much as part of their ethos. And they've been on quite a journey, I suppose, in terms of thinking about their business, their impacts, and you know, the kind of the life cycle of their products, and whether they can support their customers to send their shoes back to get repaired and all that kind of thing. So they're really thinking about their materials, their footprint, everything, which being a footwear manufacturer. So, but working with them, thinking about, okay, so you want to really be a regenerative business and think about impact in the world, and also have a regenerative culture. And we know that sometimes there can be a disconnect. So we want to do one thing out there in the world, which is all very lovely, and then we find ourselves actually not behaving very well or defaulting to old models of command and control and, you know, sort of military models of organization, that actually some could argue, you know, that's kind of what got us here in the first place. is this kind of linear, top-down, machine model type thinking, where we're doing to rather than, you know, collaborating with, essentially. And so in really thinking about, well, what does a regenerative culture look like for them in their organization? We've done a lot of work, and it's not just me, other people, Giles Hutchins and Laura Storm and various other people who are kind of working in this space. And really what surfaced is a framework that speaks their language about connection to nature, about the actual physiological changes that happen when you wear barefoot shoes. So you're not overstriding, you're not going to create injury to yourself, you're just taking small steps, feeling your way, very conscious of the environment around you. And what we've done is bring together a whole approach to coaching, which is based on those principles. So no big goals. Sure. It's all about, let's sense the environment. You know, where am I? What's my posture, you know, in relation to what's going on? What kind of a direction, or how am I adding value? So it's thinking more about joining with things that provide value, rather than, you know, what's your mission in life? What's your purpose in life? And you've got the haves and the have-nots, don't we? We know that in coaching, because it's like, you know, have you found your purpose yet? And so busy scurrying around trying to find this purpose, you know, as opposed to just join something that's purposeful. And don't worry too much about discovering, you know, this kind of true north that we're all kind of looking for. And so that's just kind of creating a different way of framing the conversation. And it means that you can focus on little things that are happening and really notice how, oh, so this is emerging here on the margins of my work or my awareness, and I'm curious about it. I wonder what that means. I wonder, you know, perhaps that's indicating, so maybe I can take some little steps forward with that and see what happens. So I'm not rocking the whole organizational boat with some massive individualistic decision, you know. And of course, these habits are hard to break out of, even when, you know, as an organization, they're committed to that journey, you know, we all are. But it's like right from the start, helping the internal coaches just to, you know, we've just invented tools and models that they can use that supports the way that they want to be, which is, you know, just amazing. I'm really loving it. I'm really loving it, because I've worked, you probably experienced this, worked with so many organizations where, you know, you bring coaching in. Even the language is a bit weird, isn't it? Yeah, it is. And then they kind of got this thing called coaching and kind of don't quite know what to do with it. It doesn't really fit. You know, they spend all this time probably on lots of supervision and stuff to figure out what's not right. And, you know, nothing wrong with supervision. I'm a supervisor, but you know what I mean? It's kind of like, it's not set up for success. And it's so lovely when it's kind of just all really coming together, the whole ethos of what they're trying to do and the approach to coaching and the way we want to learn to, and grow together. So.
Lovely. And I'm getting a sense that it's really helpful in working this way to sort of shift the culture, you know, so if there's any more you might say about that.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. And maybe I'll speak to, you know, to another client that I'm working with as well, where I guess there's sort of parallels, really, is we've all inherited mindsets around career, leadership, organizational structures, hierarchy, authority, all that kind of stuff. It's kind of, we just absorb it in, you know, through the ether. And even though we might criticize it and say, you know, things need to change, actually, when it comes to shifting and changing, it's incredibly difficult. So we have to be really clear about what that shift looks like. And it's like learning a dance step. It's far easier to see somebody doing a dance step and copy them than it is to try and read a textbook about it. And so I think the knack is, and so this other organisation I'm working with, putting together a leadership programme, and they really want sustainability leadership to be very central. And of course, they already have a leadership competence framework from previously. And so kind of looking at that, it's like, do you want to just bolt this stuff on, or does this really need to be more central? And so through that kind of negotiating, and language is often very important, you know, that we're not giving off the wrong kind of signals, and we're learning to dovetail where we can. So, you know, thinking about your own personal values and what you stand for, your integrity, and then just kind of deepening that with a sense of, and what's your integrity and values when it comes to impact in the world. And in their case, they have, you know, some quite ambitious goals around achieving net zero and that sort of thing. So it's already baked into their strategy. How do we leverage that? But not so that it feels like they're being beaten with a stick, but actually let's look for what's already there and evolve that, find the right language, link it to the processes that you're already committed to about responsible decision making, for example. I forgot my question now.
Oh no, I was talking about transforming culture, really.
That's what happens in coaching, isn't it? It's kind of like,
get very excited and yeah.
but I think this is the thing, it's like we've got to learn that you can't use a doing to model.
Yeah.
You know, the Einstein quote, whatever it is, you know, to address the issues, you can't apply the same level of thinking that created them, that got you there. So this kind of top-down hierarchical, right, we're all doing this, is simply going to lead to really irresponsible decisions that don't consider the whole picture. So for example, I just happen to know, again, because of some other little bits and pieces of work and networks that I'm involved with. So, you know, the NHS has got quite ambitious, well, it's got a 2030 net carbon goal, I think. And so you could say, well, you know, we're just gonna have all electric ambulances, no matter where, you know, they are. You have to look, so you could come with a very linear approach to that and just kind of in a very, you know, so we're going to have this, this and this, build new hospitals or whatever, and really not factor in the wider impacts of those decisions. And the great opportunity here is actually to collaborate and partner differently with the ecosystem that's impacted. So I think it was Donella Meadows' husband, I think it was David Meadow, I always get his name wrong, but he differentiates between global challenges and universal challenges. So if we think about global challenges, we might think about, for example, carbon's a good example. Is that unless governments and big business from all around the world come together and make some decisions, then actually I can make a little bit of a difference where I am, but it's, you know, we really need that level of alignment. Whilst if we're thinking about universal challenges, those things like clean air, clean water, not having rubbish in our streets, having food that we can eat that's not going to poison us, you know, and that requires more, I would say, kind of bioregional thinking, thinking about what's good for this region. So a high-speed train might work brilliantly in some parts of the world, but it's just not going to work in a small country, you know, it's not going to have the benefits. Or, you know, back to the electric ambulances might work in some parts of the UK, but probably not in remote rural areas, you know. And, you know, things like building new hospitals. Well, what are we going to, you know, or do we actually adapt and change the ones we already have? So it requires systemic thinking. And I think this is what's so lovely and so beautiful, because it dovetails with what's happened, I think, in the coaching world. As we moved away about 10 years ago now, isn't it, really starting to see a shift away from that linear thinking to, you know, systemic leadership coaching and constellations and all the wonderful things that we've picked up along the way that equips us to help our clients also to think, okay, so I can't just go off and be this heroic leader that's off to change the world. And of course, you know, we still need heroes and we still need activists, but we've got to be able to work together. And so we need people who are much more effective at partnering, leading beyond authority. And so the leadership stance that comes with addressing climate issues and environmental issues, I think, is fundamentally different at its core to what we've, you know, kind of have inherited from the past.
Mm-hmm. Really interesting. And any more you would say about that in terms of the different kind of leader that we might want to be supporting?
I think whenever I'm running workshops, I just try and keep things as simple as possible, because I hate it when you've got that person at the back who's throughout the whole session has got a frown on their forehead, you know, kind of like going, I'm still stuck on this model that you introduced, or you know. So I just think in terms of horizontal leadership, you know, and vertical leadership.
Sure.
Yeah, and we've emphasized horizontal leadership till the cows come home, and that's all been reinforced by, you know, the business schools and the thought leaders who are surprisingly of a certain, you know, group of people, mostly, you know, white men. So, you know, the system, I'm not men bashing here or anything like that, but it's just the system reinforces itself through these self-reinforcing loops. It just continues to recreate itself. And then, of course, it's, you know, you know, the kind of confirmation bias that comes with that of, you know, what we're seeing fits our certain model and therefore it must be right and we've got the research to prove it, as opposed to, it's much harder to measure the impacts of, let's just call it horizontal leadership. And by that, I mean, leading across the whole piece, leading across the system, you know, popping up where you need to pop up to make a difference. And I think, you know, all credit to the Coaching Climate Alliance, I think they've just done a brilliant job of just doing that. They've modelled that beautifully, I think, to the coaching community by not trying to set up a new set of standards or, you know, of course, if you want to run your programme on climate coaching, great, but it's not like you don't all have to have gone through some rigorous training program to be able to get engaged and just involved in this work, you know, wherever you are. And so in organization development, they talk about, I hope I get this right, kind of bricolage, you know, it's just like you just start anywhere kind of approach. And leaders have, I think, have been very scared of doing that, because it's like, well, if I'm not measured on that behavior, or it doesn't directly link to my performance review or whatever it is, then I'm too scared to actually step out and do something different. And I think we are seeing a shift. I think we're seeing people who are just kind of seeing what needs to be done and happy to go out and do it and take that risk. And it's, and often it's not a risk, because actually the rewards, you know, are, you know, either they just don't stay in that organization, or they find, you know, they're kind of co-creating their career direction with the wider ecosystem and where they're needed. You know, it's a whole different way of thinking about things.
Brilliant. And you were talking about self-healing systems, and I know you've sort of got some programs called the Wisdom of Self-Healing Systems, and I'm just curious about that. Anything more you would say about that work?
Gosh. I really appreciate the question as well, because it's something that's really close to my heart. When we're talking about regenerative, you know, the word sounds energizing, doesn't it? You know?
Yeah.
Which is great. You know, I love that. And there's this implication as you lean into it, actually, it's about bringing healing to places, people. You know, we talk about the physical body, but there's also the social body in terms of what is the healing that needs to happen there. And I think healing is is a process. It's not a linear process. It doesn't have necessarily an end point. It's more about the restoration of those healing processes that often get parked and left to one side when there's a crisis. And we've been through, I think our cortisol levels over the last X number of years have just all been skyrocketing. You know, whatever your views are on what's been going on, yeah, there's something that's been triggering everybody in one shape or form that we've kind of been having to manage. And I think, you know, when our bodies, when the kind of it is the sympathetic system, isn't it? It's kind of like when that is triggered all the time, kind of go, go, go. The body can only really start healing once it gets into the kind of resting stage, which you'll know all about from your mindfulness and breathing and stuff. And we're just not individually or collectively allowing space for that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think also coaching itself has sort of had a bit of a uneasy relationship with things that it considers therapeutic, if it doesn't have a goal. I think we've left that behind, I think so, just about, but still keep bumping into that from time to time. But I realized it was a very small epiphany about a week ago where I just thought, for so long I've kind of just described myself as I'm, in the business of change, or change business, or helping people change. And I thought, I don't think I agree with that at all. I think I'm really about helping people reintegrate or just integrate, discover their wholeness with this great trust in life, that actually it's from that place that we probably don't have to worry about what happens next so much, because whatever we create, whatever we do, whatever we plan is coming from a place of wholeness. So the regeneration is, just to use a parallel from agriculture, just to jump to a slightly different thing, but often we think that if you chuck fertilizer on a plant, that's what's needed to help it grow. Well, all it's doing is feeding the plants, and it's destroying the soil structures. Yeah. And really what we need to be doing is building up the soil structure, and then all sorts of things will grow from it. We don't need to worry about whether it's going to grow well or not. So just look after the soil, tend the soil. And I think my focus with the wisdom of self-healing systems is nature knows how to regenerate if we can give it the right conditions. And through that sort of principle of biomimicry, of like what we can learn from one aspect of nature, we can, even if I cut myself, not intentionally, in the kitchen, my body goes into this whole thing called a healing cascade. And it goes through different stages, and it's able to repair itself, with very little intervention. And if it's a bit more serious, I might need to, look after it in a slightly different way. And then I realize actually, I am not just myself, I am me plus my ecosystem. So I better keep my ecosystem healthy as well. So in terms of what I'm putting into my body, maybe the soil had better be healthy. So I realized that a healing cascade starts to involve the whole wider ecosystem. And so when we're thinking through that lens of healing, it draws us out, into the universe and to our connection with each other. And that these principles, they might look slightly different in different places, but actually when you study them, that you get down to the core kind of nuggets, really, in terms of what's happening with healing. And then you realize, oh gosh, this applies everywhere. How beautiful is that? And so what I've been doing over the last few years is really just trying to develop my own knowledge. I'm actually, you'll laugh, I'm on a course, I'm training to be a medical herbalist.
Lovely.
So phytotherapy, that was my response to COVID was, gosh, let's look after our health, you know, and I want to feel more confident in that, because I've always loved plants and foraging and, you know, medicinals and stuff like that, but actually to take that seriously and think, okay, so, you know, there's so much more I can learn about that and start integrating it into my coaching work and also into the teaching that I'm doing. So yeah, it's just beautiful when we start seeing those things coming together.
Really lovely, and really, well, it's a real sense of hopefulness really that I'm experiencing listening to you, and just loving the passion that you're, and I wasn't laughing because I did some studying of phytotherapy myself. It was only because I changed a year of a degree, and then, you know, so it's still something I draw on a lot. So I'm feeling hopeful listening to you speak, Catherine, which is really good, as we've got war with Europe, war with Ukraine, and the IPCC report just coming out, the rest of it. So it's hard to keep the optimism levels up, really.
Sure. This is one of the things that I've learned is healing also, I'm not training as a homeopath, but there is that homeopathic principle, I think, at work that we can really draw hope from, is that just one little thing can shift, that creates a cascade. So if I want to heal something in my body, and I just think about, if I just want to heal that one cell, of course, you know, I couldn't do that, because actually if I heal one cell, I'm going to heal more, and you know, the whole thing's going to shift. But this is, so going back to an NHS example was, in this program that I'm running, we're thinking about examples of leading with hope. And somebody said they saw that when their senior leadership was asked a question, what does it mean to be kind? Mm-hmm. What is a kind trust? So that's just one little question. But it got them going. And then that everybody started talking about this question, what does it mean to be kind? So it kind of spread, you know? Lovely. So I really believe that when we tap into some little shift that's wanting to happen, and I've, you know, just great, you know, prayers with Ukrainians and with Russians, but, you know, I'm sure that somewhere deep in their hearts, there's this kind of heartfelt longing to not be in this situation and to accept differences and to be reconciled. I mean, like, and maybe that's not an impossibility. Maybe when people start waking up and they just start seeing each other as neighbors, as, you know, part of one big human family. I'm pleased that the sense of hope catches, because I don't always feel it.
No, of course not.
I've been through my dark moments, I must admit, in the last few years, but I think this sense of, what is this, just like one little thing, this one little shift that's maybe wanting to happen. And as coaches, again, you know, we know that questions can be powerful. So what does it mean to be kind? And just to have faith in the power of that.
Really lovely. And I can see that, you know, how that links in with the work you were talking about earlier, Vivo Barefoot, because you were talking about the changes and not doing too. And I guess just tuning in, isn't it, to what, like you said, what wants to happen, you know. There's a power already there, isn't it, waiting to be unleashed.
That's right. Right.
Lovely, lovely. And just as we sort of move towards wrapping up, just anything else that you feel moved to say, you know, perhaps particularly in connection with the climate crisis or just generally?
This lunchtime I went to the shops and you know, just picked a few things up. I got my boys coming over for dinner, and there was a whole class of children with buckets and kind of little grabbers, and they were out doing a litter pick. I know,
Bless them.
and so I just stopped and I said, wow, you guys are doing such a great job. And I applauded them. Brilliant. And the teachers looked pleased because I think, you know, going out on a bit of a cold, wet afternoon with the class.
February, yeah.
B or whatever, you know, what might not have been the top of their list. But I just think it's like, how do we celebrate the things that are happening? And tell those stories. And I think this is where things like, you know, the kind of seed bank that is being grown with all the different ideas and approaches. And I think, wow, in just such a short amount of time, there are so many people who, you know, have applied to run sessions, who've got so many stories to tell. You know, I've been running a small group called ourselves the Forest Floor because we wanted to explore, you know, what's emerging, you know. So we've kind of put that on hold for now because it just felt there were too many other things. Oh, we put it on hold because there's too many other things going on in this space.
There you go. You know? There you go.
But it kind of filled a need, you know. Mm-hmm. And so I think there is this piece around, let's really celebrate and encourage what's happening, because goodness me, we can so easy, you know, we know from neuroscience that, you know, the fight, fright response is so much quicker, you know, and we have to consciously stop and think, no, what's the good stuff that's happening? How do we tell those stories? How do we, you know, use those to inspire ourselves and each other? And I think that's just really the way that we've got to go. And it, no matter how small that thing is. So, you know, just because it's not some bilateral treaty on XYZ, you know, it's like, if the kids in my neighborhood can learn that you don't just toss stuff into the bushes, and teach their children to do that, that could be quite significant for my little area.
Absolutely. No, you're absolutely right. So, more to celebrate then. I like that. Kathleen, where can people find out more about your work? I think you've got a new website, is that right? Do you need to say what that is?
Thank you. Yeah, it's just about launched today, so I was hoping that I might already been able to kind of publicize it, but it's www.wisdomofselfhealingsystems.com. And there's information about my programs there. I'll be popping it up on LinkedIn soon, I hope, so people will be able to find out about that. Yeah.
Writing. Brilliant. Okay, well, look, thank you so much. It's been really fascinating. And thank you for making me feel hopeful amidst all of this mess.
Lovely to catch up with you, Liz. It's great. Yeah.
All right, then. Thank you very much.